We are on page Kuf Nun Beis. Kuf Nun Beis, the Yesh Averos. It's the last paragraph. The beginning of the last paragraph on the page, the Yesh Averos, She'afal pi Shaloike Boilam Hazeh, Yilke Bagehenim. There are Averos that are so terrible that not only does a person suffer in this world, the person suffers in the next world. This general rule, Karis, there are all different types of punishments. There's something called Karis, and there's something called Misa Bidei Shemayim. And there's a lot of discussion in the Farshim, the commentators, is what exactly do they mean? What exactly is the scope of the punishment in this world and in the next world? He's discussing over here in a general concept. There are averos that a person can do in this world where he will be punished in two worlds. In this world and in the next world. And what is that? That is machloikis. Yeravam ben Nevat. So v'yesh adevo shalpi shaloike b'lamazeh yilke b'gehenem, he'll be punished in the next world as well. Kigon Yeravam ben Nevat. What did he do? Shehecheti. He sinned. He caused others to sin. And here is the critical words. V'chol shehecheti es harabim. Anyone that is responsible for causing the masses to sin. Ein lechelek l'olam haba. What is the story of Yeravam ben Nevat? He disagreed with the king of Klal Yisrael, Rechavam. Shlomo, after he died, the next his successor was his son, Rechavam. He was the king. Rechavam, when he took over the Malchus, he decided to raise the taxes. He decided to be tougher than his father. His father was a very tough leader, of course, Shlomo HaMelech, but he wanted to go even further. And his advisors told him, now is not the time, the generation has changed, you have to go in the opposite direction, you have to go easy on the people, and you have to lower the taxes. And it was a very charismatic person by the name of Yeravam ben Nevat that was not pleased with his approach, and he rebelled. And he succeeded in taking with him 10 of the 12 Shvatim of Klal Yisrael, forming his own Malchus, what we know in Tanakh as the Malchus of Yisrael. Only two Shvatim remain with Shlomo HaMelech, the Shevet Yehuda and the Shevet of Binyamin. Then what happened not that long after, people had Charata. They wanted to return to the Malchus of Yehuda. They wanted to go back. They realized it was the mistake. Why? Because they were not able to go to the Beis HaMikdash and serve Hashem. The Beis HaMikdash was in the jurisdiction of the Malchus of Yehuda. And Yeravam ben Nevat had no spiritual outlet for his group, his 10 Shvatim. Because the Malchus of Yehuda would not let them come into Yerushalayim because these are rebels. The Moirid, the Malchus, by forming their own Malchus. So Yeravam ben Nevat, instead of acknowledging he made a mistake and making peace with Rechavam and letting the people return back to the Malchus of Yehuda, returning back to one big happy family in Klal Yisrael, he did something which was horrible. He made his own religion. He made his own temple. In fact, he said, I'm going to outdo the Malchus of Yehuda. Every time we go to Yerushalayim, there's traffic. There's gridlock. So I'm going to make two temples. One in one part of Eretz Yisrael and another in the other part. So it'll be easy for the Jews to go to worship Hashem, Now it started out, they would worship Hashem. But when they began to worship Hashem, they realized that they're not doing kehalacha. And eventually went down the slippery slope, and he was able to influence them to worship idols. And he erected an egel hazav, no different than the egel they made in the Midbar. One egel in Basel, one egel in Don. There were two major temples, and he influenced the majority, 10/12 of Klal Yisrael, to worship idols. And we know what happened to them. Eventually, this group, they never did a full teshuvah. And about 100 years later, Sancheriv came along and exiled them, never to return. We don't know what happened to the Aseres HaShvatim. The one that is responsible for the loss of the Aseres HaShvatim is one person, Yeravam ben Nevat. He is the one that started this whole process. He's not the only one. There's Achav. There are other people that participated and will get credit for this horrible event. But he was, without question, the beginning. He was the beginning of it all. And therefore, he has, Chazal tell us, he has no chelek in Olam Haba for the ugly machlekes he made against Rechavam. When you cause someone else to do an aver, you have no chelek. And furthermore, he writes, another example, if you prevent a person from doing something good, Elu b'nei Eli, who is in that category? B'nei Eli, they, what did they do? They did not allow the women to bring their korbanos on time, and really more significantly is they did not let them go back to their husbands on time, because, and these women came to the Beis HaMikdash to bring korbanos after giving birth. A woman who gives birth has an obligation to bring a korban. They came to the Beis HaMikdash and they put their money in the pushka. But the children of Eli HaKoyin, Chofni Pinchas, had a reputation that they dilly-dallied. They did not immediately offer the korbanos on behalf of these people. And people would wait around, would linger around in Yerushalayim to make sure their korbanos were offered. And if they did not linger around, it could very well be that their korbanos were never offered. So what was the consequence of this? First of all, they caused them tsar by having to wait for no reason whatsoever. Number two, Chazal say further, they prevented them from having more children. Do you believe this? Because if they were able to put the money in the pushka and assume that the carbon would be offered immediately, there was no corruption, they can go home immediately and be with their husbands that night, and then they can possibly become pregnant and have another child and be married with the population of Klal Yisrael. And by Chofni Pinchas having a reputation of that they were corrupt, and the korbanos, the money was not used to bring the korbanos, and they would wait to make sure they get a receipt. Everything was done kedas chadin, and by putting pressure and making demands, when will it be done, when will it be done, they had to delay going home for a period of time. There were many people that were never born, that could have been born. Okay, you know, you find this, you know, Rabbi Tendler, I remember Rabbi Tendler, he said this about Rav Moshe Feinstein, Zichron Levracha, at the Levaya, Rav Moshe's Levaya. So Rav Tendler, he said, my father was telling this to me in the context that he was a little surprised that he would say this in public, at a Levaya in front of 10,000 people, but Rabbi Tendler, he said that whenever a shaila of Maris, of Hilchis Nida came to Rav Moshe, that was priority one. Okay, Rav Moshe had probably hundreds of shaylas, extremely complicated questions. And Rav Moshe couldn't paskin on every shaila as it came to him. He had to do research. The big shaylas, the heavy-duty shaylas, he did research before he paskin some off the cuff. He paskin some he thought about. He wanted to review. He wanted to think about. He wanted to look into. And which shaila had priority. And Rav Tendler, this is what was told to me. My father told me this. What he said by Levi is that the shaila of Hilchas Nida came to him, priority one. And he once asked him why, and he said basically this: Matern Isha Labala. What, I'm going to go dilly dally? This has to be answered now, this moment. You wait even five minutes, it could be a whole different story. Then the assumption is Isha is not with the Labala, and then they can wait another day or two, whatever it is. So this by Rav Moshe was critical. It's a tremendous achrayus.
Is it by Rav? It's a festival of Rav. Friday night, a young married guy came on a shaila. He urged the husband that he wasn't sure he was repeating what his wife said because he was missing. He said he walked in the snow, 10 blocks. To talk to the wife,
to ask, to clarify. So this is something, a very, very powerful concept, which we don't always appreciate. Well, Rabbanim, they have a lot on their plate. Place can have a lot on their plate, and priority one. And where do you learn the Musar? You learn the Musar from the children of Eli, who was severely criticized for not offering the korbanos of the yoldos, the women who came to Yerushalayim. What's the big deal? They did not, Chazal say, it's a Gemara, they didn't go home. They stayed over in a hotel in Yerushalayim for a night, two nights, until they got a receipt from the Beis HaMikdash that their korban was offered. They didn't trust them. And that should not have been the case.
They were called as if they slept.
That's another right. Because the husbands were not able to be there, so therefore it's like a nasty type of a statement. You prevented these women from being with their husbands, so therefore we're going to say it in an insulting way to you. It's like you had relations with these women. Denying these women being with their husbands is equivalent to you being nichshol in an aver of eishes ish. It's powerful stuff. This over here, Yidach Chassid, he cites, and someone that does this is punished in this world and in the next world. If you're moineya, you prevent a person from having an opportunity to do a mitzvah. This was the biggest of the biggest, having a person, having a child. Not every moment is it mesugal for a person to have a child. We all know that. They all talk about a woman who's a nida, is it limits the bechlau, the laws of Hilchos Nida, create difficulties in women conceiving. This is something which you always you hear about Yedua, and they always challenge today the laws of Nida are very, very chomor, much more chomor than that is required according to the Torah. According to the letter of the law, what it says in the Torah, the Dinim Deraisa are much, much more relaxed than what Chazal have, what it says in Shulchan Aruch. And women and doctors, OBGYNs, will tell people who are having a difficult time conceiving is that you should speak to your rabbi and maybe he can relax for you some of the laws of Hilchos Nida, whatever what is permissible within the framework of halacha. You have to really have big grace of places to know to the paskin nishaylus in order to increase your chances of conceiving.
And make a statement, usually they say the seed should rattle, know this stuff much more make.
So that's a very dangerous thing to do that. Right, because I know someone once told me, and I believe him very much. He told me that there was a fellow, a misnagit, someone that had no shaykhis to Hasidim. No shaykhis. He was a regular litvak. And all of his whole life, all of his shaylos, he went to his rav. And his rav was talking very machmir. So he decided to go, when these shaylos came up, he abandoned his litvish rav, and he went to a Hasidish rav that had a reputation of being very, very lenient. And he told me that, you're not mekana his children. That's what he said to me. He said to me, you'll meet his children. You're not going to be mekana them. Shook me up when he said that to me. Like I myself, I don't have any problem shopping around for a heter when I need a heter. I don't know. I'm not from the big machmirim, but when he told this to me. Obviously, in this matter of Hilchos Nida, this is already a different league. He shook me up. He says, listen, this guy, this is not his machane. Everyone has to know their machane, their camp. How did you grow up? Who are your parents? Where do you come from? Where does your wife's family come from? You got to stick to your own when it comes to psak halacha, piske halacha. That's what I'm saying. When it comes to Piskei Halacha, stick to where you come from. All right. Every here and there, you have a tough shayla. So you can be makel. You go to another, you find the Pesach that can give you guidance, different tradition. But when there's no need to be makel, I'm not talking about like over here, the OBGYN says to you, I think you should have a conversation with your rabbi. Okay? When your doctor says you should have a conversation with your rabbi, that's a difference. When the doctor's not telling you to have a conversation with your rabbi and you on your own are looking for trouble, it's one thing to look for trouble when it comes, can I eat this candy bar? I gotta have this candy bar. Okay, so you want to go find the head mat. Okay, but when it comes to Hilchis Nida, and you want to start cutting corners, he said to me, you're not Makan his children. You know, that's quite a statement what this fellow said to me. Okay, I don't know. I don't know who the person is. This is what he said to me. I once learned with this fellow. So, you know, he shook me up in this particular matter, how it ties in to this discussion. Let us go further. So we have here two different ideas. A person that is machti es harabim. And then we have a person that is moinea. He prevents people from doing mitzvahs. And by the way, in the laws of chinuch, every yeshiva has different criteria of when they're willing to throw out a child from the yeshiva. Okay, when are they going to say to a parent, call parents, your child has been expelled. Every yeshiva, some don't pay tuition, very good. So whatever it is, whatever, everyone has different criteria. But I think there's one rule that every institution agrees on. Every institution beyond a shadow of that agrees on, and that is where a child is having a negative influence on other children. If it's clear as day that a child in the yeshiva comes into the class and he's problematic, so no, then you have to have. But when he comes into the class and is influencing other students to do things that are unacceptable, machti asarabim, or moinea rabim from doing good things, that already is a whole different league. One thing to have a kid in the class that's a problem, but he's not bothering anyone. I heard this also from Rabbi Lamb, Rabbi Norman Lamb, Rabbi Dr. Norman Lamb, Shabbat Fuhr Shalem. He spoke about people who are gay, okay, or openly people in the shul who are open, who are basically, they live a life of averus. They do things that the Torah says are called a to'eva. And okay, you don't have this issue in Brooklyn, in Flatbush. You don't find people coming into your average shul and are proud to be doing things like this, but you leave the comfort zone of the metropolitan area and you go outside or go over the bridge, you're in a different world. And there are many Orthodox, very choshevah Orthodox shuls with very choshevah balabatim, very choshevah rabbanim. Outside of New York, it's not Flatbush. Everyone knows that. And it's not so uncommon to have in a shul, in a choshevah shul, a balabas who has a partner, a male partner. And he comes to shul on Shabbos, and he davens, and it is what it is. And he wants an aliyah, and he wants to participate in the service, v'hulu, v'hulu. What do you do? Big dilemma. Okay, you don't hear about this in Flatbush. Flatbush is a different environment. So he said very clearly, I listened to a shir he gave on this, he said very clearly, he says, his opinion, and what he in fact did as a rabbi, he was a rabbi of the Jewish center, and he dealt with this. If they don't influence other people, leave them be. Even though everyone knows about them, they're registered as what they are, v'chulu v'chulu, just because they are, he did not feel that's an influence on other people. Come to shul, they behave themselves, they're not campaigning that everyone should be like them, they're not bragging about it, they're not making an issue, they're just quiet people. They come to shul, they sit down, they daven, they get an aliyah, not an aliyah, they get a kibbutz, the gabbai knows, doesn't know. If someone is not influencing another person, leave him be.
Can they be the Baal
Teshuva? I don't know. Maybe yes. I don't know. I would assume it makes a difference between being the davening and the yomim leroyim musaf, and on a Tuesday morning when you have only 13 people in shul. Okay, I would assume it goes that far in his opinion. If everyone is perfect. Okay, he's doing a very big aveira. The Torah says what? What?
He's
representing others. So he's doing a very big aveira. It's very likely he'll tell you that he's a choyla. it's very likely he'll tell you that, or we can look at it like that. You're going to say that he's a mashchis. He's a, those type of people, he surely argues, there's a lot of ignorance in this matter. So going off a whole new topic. He explained it really, really well. There's a lot of ignorance in this matter. In the secular world, there's something called nurture versus nature. Okay? There are very, very few people who come to shul in the category called nurture. Those people, you're right, those people don't even learn walking to the shul. Those people you can throw out publicly, the shugaim, those type of people. Nurture. There are people, dealing people in the category of nature. And I don't know what I'm talking about. The terminology, I learned this all from Lehrer on NPR. When I used to work in the morning and listen to him on the radio, I learned all this whole chacham, and then I heard Rabbi Lamb, and everything clicked. When I heard Rabbi Lamb, I didn't understand what Larry was talking about, and I would not have understood one word of what Rabbi Lamb would be talking about. When I heard them both together, then everything clicked together, and everything made a lot of sense to me, all what this whole issue. But the point is, he says this, that this is a very big rule in life. If someone is a problem, he's doing things that are unacceptable according to halacha, unacceptable. If he doesn't bother anyone and he's not an influence in your community, in your society, it's not necessarily a big mitzvah for you to get rid of him.
Like a Machal Shabbos?
Machal, but it's even worse. This. What's worse? This or Machal Shabbos? Sorry, this is worse because this is a to'eva.
Yeah, I think it is.
Yeah. It's a to'eva. This is a to'eva. It's a lifestyle. It's a little bit worse. I don't know, maybe I don't know. He went and this is the yesod. It's the yesod in chinuch, and it's the yesod in dealing with people. No one is perfect. Everyone has their issues, and the main thing is, as long as they don't bother anyone, they're not bothering anyone, they're not influencing anyone, leave them be. Mind your own business. Look the other way. And that's really what the Seder Hasidim says. He says, he doesn't say the Zogar, but he's saying over here is there's a category of people who are machati esarab. There's a category of people who are moinea, prevent people from doing good deeds. These are the people you got to watch out for. Stam a guy who walks the streets, doesn't bother, mind your own business. Everyone has their own issues. Yeah.
You mentioned recently that Hollywood trickles down to everyone. Even
correct.
If someone's going to a store.
So you're arguing the guy just sitting in shul is an advertisement. So you have to judge. Is it really an advertisement? You have to know your people. Maybe in Flatbush it might be an advertisement. The guy sitting in shul. Out of town, not necessarily. Every situation is different. You can't generalize. The culture of outside of the metropolitan area is so different. It's so different than what we're used to here in Flatbush, even in the most modern shuls. Even in the most modern shuls in Brooklyn, it's still affected by, Baruch Hashem, by a very vibrant, very strong religious community. And even in the more modern circles, there is a certain standard. You don't have that out of town. It's a very different type of world. And you have to know, you have to understand, you have to be able to be responsible. You're making a good point. Just the guy sitting in shul is an advertisement, trickles down. You're right. Where do you draw the line? Where's the balance? That's why you need a rabbi. Your rabbi has to be able to make that decision. Okay, let's go further. The in Taimar. You'll ask me a question. Me'achar, shekos, if it says in the Pasuk, Poiket, avayin avos, albanu v'yal b'nei b'nei b'yal sh'v'yal sh'leishim, v'yal ribayim, v'aloi l'b'nei eili kama doiris. What are you talking about? Eli's children was considered to be a terrible avera, a terrible, terrible avera, and the pasuk says that Hashem will remember him; they'll be punished for many four generations. Hashem put they were punished more than four generations. How do you know that famous Gemara, Abaya and Rava? Chazal said, tell this to us, I'm sure many of you have heard this before, Abaya and Rava were descendants of the B'nai Eli. Abaya lived until how old? One lived until 60, and Rava lived until
40.
Abaye was 60 years old. Rava was 40 years old when they died. Why did Abaye live 20 years more than Rava?
Gemilas
Chasadim. Abaye was only Oisek in Torah, and therefore he died b'chatzi yomov. He was meant to live till 80. That's what Chazal say. He died 40. Why? The curse of Eli. Eli was cursed because
he
didn't.
Also.
What?
His father died.
He was called, Abaye was called Abaye. He was named after his father. He was named after Rabbi Banachmeni. Okay, he was named after his father. His father was a Yosem. Abaye was a Yosem. He was raised by Rabbi. Abaye was a Yosem. An orphan by his uncle. By his uncle. He was an orphan. Why was he an orphan? Because his father died very young. Why did his father die very young? The curse. The curse of being a descendant of Eli HaKoyin. Eli was criticized. Why didn't you give Musar to your children? Chofni v'Pinchas, their behavior is unacceptable. Why didn't you give Musar? Because he did not give Musar, he allowed the corruption to continue in the highest place in the world, in Mishkan Shiloh. Mishkan Shiloh, his descendants were cursed. Abaye died with half of his, what he should have been, 40 years old. Could you imagine if Abaye lived another 40 years? Could you imagine what the Gemara would have looked like? It would have been an entirely different Talmud Bavli. We have the Havayos, the Abaye of Arava, the whole Daf Gemara, the whole Shtak of the Gemara, the whole Daf Gemara is called the Havayos, the conversations of Abaye and Rava. Abaye and Rava died very young. 40 years old, 60 years old. Why? Because they were cursed. Why were they cursed? They were descendants of Eli HaKoyin. Why? Corruption. We suffer ad hayoyim hazeh. Till this very day, we suffer because of the corruption of Eli HaKoyin. Because since he was cursed, Abaye and Rava were cursed. And because they were cursed, they died half their age. They were unable to develop the Daf Gemara the way it could have been. It could have been double as good. More than double as good. It would have grown exponentially had they lived, had there been more discussions of Abaye and Rava. Look at what we lost out on when you open up a page of Gemara Ad Hayom Hazeh. Isn't that a very practical lesson that comes out of Shiloh? How it affects us Ad Hayom Hazeh? The Daf Gemara is not the same. It's an incredible, incredible thought. So here, Rava lived 20 more years. Why? He was oisik in gemilos chasadim. What's pshat? Why do you live longer? When you're oisik in gemilos chasadim, it takes a lot of time. Okay? It takes time. Hashem pays you back for your time. Don't make any mistake. People always say, I can't do this. I don't have time. I'm busy. For every minute you spend helping someone else, Hashem pays you back at least double. He lived 20 more years. How much do you think he spent during those 20 more years doing Gemilas Chasadim? 20 years of Gemilas Chasadim? Very unlikely. It's very unlikely he spent 20 years worth doing Gemilas Chasadim. He spent an hour here, an hour there, 15 minutes here, 20 minutes here, and for that Hashem paid him 20 years. Okay, so you can imagine it's the best possible investment you can make to be oisek in gemilos chasadim. Hashem pays you back. Also keep it up. L'man yarichun yomecha. Why is there bracha for arich hashem when it comes to parents? Because it takes a lot of time. Every other day you got to go visit. You have to go spend time making sure they have everything is in order. It's an enormous amount of time. The Torah says, you think you're losing out on life? You're not losing out on nothing. L'man ya'arichun yonecha, you live a lot longer. Abaye and Rava is the Musa Haskel. Abaye, Rava was Isaac and Milas Chasadim, he had more time. Hashem gave him 21 years. Abaye was only Torah, he had 40 years. Hayu'acha comes, so he's asking me a question over here, is what in the world is going on here? They were cursed for so many generations. It's a beferish apostolic in the Torah. Hashem only punishes for four generations. And even the four generations is only on condition that the children are behaving like the parents. But if the children do not behave like the parents, there's no punishment whatsoever. So what's going on over here? Okay, basic question asked by the Sefer Chassidim. And they were definitely not behaving like Eli HaKohen. There was no corruption by Abai and Rava. Ella, look at this thing over here. It says there's something shocking. Ella, im adam chayti pamachas nifroim imenu dal doros. This is what he says over here. Like I told you many times, the sefer can be censored. Every single whole sefer. Why? Each paragraph should be censored. And here it says, a person is one avera, they punish him before doros. The imshana boy, ayasa chayt achar nifroim imenu ches doros. V'im shileish boy, if he does it a third time, ayasa gimel avoynes haray nifroim imenu yud beis doros. When it says you only punish for four generations, that's for one sin. But if you do it a second time, the generations keep on going and going and going and going. Where in the world would you ever hear a vote like this? You go to every Musa Shmuz, you'll never ever hear someone say something like this. This is something that we cannot accept. This is something that we cannot tolerate, such Musa. We don't want to accept it. This is just not accepted in the Orthodox community, this type of answer. Okay? But he says it. He says it, and like I told you many times, we don't necessarily paskin like anything he says, or like most things that he says, but it's still very, very worthy to hear what he says. Because there is a kernel of truth that is very stinging and penetrating in his holy words.
But he's explaining an event. And as he's explaining why...
He's saying that they were suffered as a direct punishment of Eli HaKohen, did not give Musar, and Eli HaKohen did not give Musar to his children multiple times.
What I'm saying is, you said we don't accept it.
Yeah.
But he's giving you a plausible explanation.
Therefore, being that we do not accept this, you're not going to find today one Baal Mus that will tell you that this is acceptable. And therefore, the question remains, what's the answer then? There is no answer. There is no answer. We have to get used to understanding that in Yadlis, there are no answers to some of the biggest questions. Not everything has an answer. We live in a world today, everything has to have an answer. If you don't have an answer, you're out. It's not true. There are more things that do not have answers than do have answers.
So we don't accept this answer?
No, definitely not. Okay. Definitely not. Never heard anyone say this answer. Never. All the Musa Shmuz that you ever heard in Yeshiva and all the books that you read today, they'll never quote this.
We thought if the children already punished from their parents, if they continue to say...
That's what he says. It's, well, we said that.
No, but here you're saying
Even the second generation did not. So what he's saying over here, he's saying that's only true when you do Navera once. But when you keep on doing the Avera again, 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 and again, all of the rules don't apply. Even if the children are not following your ways, and the four-generation rule doesn't apply. What? Where could you come to say such a thing like that? Any contemporary rabbi, from the most modern to the most Haredi, would say this answer today, he would be dismissed as saying nonsense. Do you agree with what I just said? Any person living today would get up and say the reason why the children of Eli HaKohen died was the curse, and even though it says in the pasuk four generations, because that only applies when you do the Avera once. When you deliver it two, three, four, five times, we go down all the generations and we don't say anyone living today that would stand up and say such a thing. The most modern Orthodox rabbi to the Haredi Shebe Haredi, we would say, this guy is we're going to revoke his smicha for saying such a thing.
I think we're talking about the Averot Shemonim et Harabim in Scott, not plain Avera.
Corruption. This corruption is plagued the world since time immemorial. There's another sort of corruption. Okay. There's a lot more to this that we don't understand. But he writes over here, Nifroyim mimenu ches doros. Vim shilesh boi oyosa gimlad avonis haray nifroyim mimenu yud beis doros. B'nei Eli, Shilshu, Ribu, V'chimshu, V'chatu, Harbe, Pamim. And look at this word that he says. V'adayin ha'ovon al ha'doyrois. Woo! Too much for me to swallow. Okay? We got to stop here. Quit while you're ahead.